It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hello and welcome back to Money for Lunch. Hey, it's really good to have you here, and more than you can imagine, because we've been having some wonderful technical issues. They've made some changes, and sometimes, you know how it is. When you make a change, you change other things that you weren't expecting to change. But change is good. It's just sometimes not pleasurable, right? So that's anyway, that's all. But hey, real quick, youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez. Are you there? If you were, you would have already received your free swag, which now is being sponsored partly by the good folks at Chili's Restaurant. Chili's, you guys are probably familiar with Chili's. They're all over the place. And so if you go to youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez, hit the red subscribe button. Let me know that you've subscribed. You get some swag from Chili's, including free food. Can you believe it? It's going to be friggin' unbelievable. So get out there, youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez, and let's make it happen. Yeah, man, let's make it happen. I like that. Let's make it happen. That's really all that matters. Some other exciting news, though. This is way cool. And what do you call it? I just want to mention this because, what can I say? It's going to be a lot of friggin' fun to do, and I'm excited about it. So I don't know if you guys are familiar. Jerry Seinfeld has this show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, right? Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Basically, Jerry and his buddies get together. They drive around in a different car, and then they talk and get coffee. And that's really it. And he's had some really big guests, including President Obama. Anyway, so I pitched a similar idea to Uber. And so Uber has given us a green light to do a pilot in a couple of episodes. And the premise is not as funny, but maybe could be. So what we're going to do is I am going to be interviewing people in the back of an Uber. We get driven around in the back of an Uber and maybe get some lunch. So Money for Lunch, back of an Uber. We're going to call it Uber Business. And, you know, it's a little play on words because everybody wants to have an Uber business. And, of course, it's sponsored by Uber. So look forward to having Uber business on your dial, because let me tell you, it's going to be amazingly fun. We got guests like Tom Hopkins, Randy Couture is going to be there. I'm going to be hitting up my friend Arnold Schwarzenegger. See if he will get in the back of an Uber and we'll have some fun. And depending on what his schedule is, I'm going to actually be seeing him in June. So we're going to be hanging out at his house. And so I'm hoping that we'll get it done then. If not, we'll have to schedule it and maybe get it done at a different time. But I think it would be wildly successful. It would be fantastic if we can make it happen. So anyway, looking for that experience to be a lot of fun. And as it happens, of course, you guys will be the first to know. And if you go to youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez, not only will you be the first to know, but you'll get some exclusive inside that non-subscribers will not get. Not to mention the free swag. So a lot of great stuff happening. Let's get this party started with my friend Clint Huff. Clint Huff was on our show not too long ago, a very interesting guy, very, just a lot of fun to hang with. And I absolutely got to hang, enjoyed his company as we got to hang out backstage at the Arnold Sports Festival. And that's where him and I met. So just a very genuinely nice guy, just a good person to hang out with. He's a professional master of ceremonies, host, announcer. You probably heard his voice, and you probably seen him on ESPN, Fox Sports. Again, the Arnold Sports Festival, and he's married some of the biggest celebrities on The Bachelor. Clint Huff, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Bert, I'm really excited. Free swag.
Free swag?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so fired up about the free swag.
The free swag. And sponsored partly by Chili's. So, yeah, sign up today. You get some free food from Chili's, man. I mean, you just can't beat that.
Free food, man, from
Chili's.
You know, I am such a simple man. And when I pass a restaurant that – well, first of all, I have to qualify this by saying that my palate is not very refined. I'm not one of those people that can detect the fine scent of oak and a hint of berry, and I'm not that guy. I'm the kind of guy that says, Chili's, that's awesome, let's go. That's me. So you have really fired me up so far this morning. And,
well, it's good to do that. I'm glad, I'm excited. Well, you know what, and I have – go ahead.
Because the whole thing about the Uber show, I think that's brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you.
And if you could lead in like the first month with Arnold, holy moly, you'll be off and running.
Yes. So we're working on that. We're hoping to get a big yes from Arnold. And I think, you know, it's something that's right up his alley. He loves to talk business. He likes to do things that are a little bit out of the box. So I think Uber business is going to be something that he'll like to do. And we'll see if we can make happen.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Where are you in that process?
We got the approval from Uber. They're going to be the main sponsor. So we got the approval from Uber. So we're going to start filming right away. And we got Tom Hopkins, legendary sales trainer. He's given his thumbs up. And Randy Couture, who's out in Vegas, he's given his thumbs up. So, we're still putting some other, some other guests together. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know what I like about finding people who come from outside the business world proper, like a Randy Couture? I love hearing how they apply the disciplines that they've, used to achieve their individual success to new adventures in the business world. Because there's a certain part where, what they say, father time always wins. And so when he can't be athletic anymore, at that level, then he's got to go into business and do something. So I'm really excited to hear how you tease out what he's bringing to his, business adventures. I think that'd be very cool.
Absolutely. And I forgot to mention, he's just not as well known as Randy Couture, but one of my favorite people, Boss Rutten, who's also, he was the first UFC champion. And Boss Rutten has been in many movies with Kevin James, Here Comes the Boom, Zookeeper, Mall Cop 2. So he's going to be stopped. We're going to be picking him up as well. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Exactly for the same reason you just said, what did you take from – from this discipline and apply it to business? And it's always an interesting idea. It's always an interesting conversation. You get so many good insights. Ed Cohen, who was a very prominent power lifter, set a lot of records. One of the things that he said to me a couple of years ago is that getting that award, getting that trophy, was worth the pain, the torn ligaments, all the pain that he went through every time he achieved that goal and got that award. It was totally worth it to him.
You know, Ed Cohen isn't just a powerlifter. He's the god of powerlifting. Whenever I had the good fortune of emceeing the Arnold Strongman competition for 10 years in a row, and Ed would come out and be like a guest judge, which is always kind of fun because, I don't know about you, but I always kind of expect an extreme athlete or the best of the best to be physically imposing. But some of the best athletes in the world are around 5.5 feet tall. I don't know exactly how tall Ed is, but he is a powerhouse packed in this 5'6" body. And he is a legend out here in – okay, so that was in Columbus, Ohio. When I met him a couple of times, nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. And then when I came back out here to Los Angeles – and in the gym, you meet a couple of people that are, powerlifting is their thing. And I said, I met Ed Cohen. And it's almost like they genuflected. Or can I please touch the edge of your garment because you've met Ed Cohen. I mean, he really is that huge in his world. And getting him in the car, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. No, he is exactly everything you said. He's in a compact body. He's got massive following, loved and beloved by just millions of people. He's just, and as you said, he's just the nicest guy ever. Great sense of humor. Always enjoy spending a little time with him. He's just a lot of fun. But you know what? Let's talk about this. Let's change subject. And I want to talk about this because both you and I have talked about our kids. I was able to meet your daughter, again, backstage at the Arnold. And I want to talk about preparing teenage children for business. So, you know, when you're working with your kids or maybe other teenage, what are some of the things? How do you start preparing your teenagers for business?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to identify who the person is. You know, I'm a firm believer that just because somebody is a blood relative doesn't mean that they're in a special category of human being. You know, like that whole thing about don't talk about my mama that way. Well, maybe you have some valid points about my mother. I don't know. I'm open to it. but the important thing is that my daughter, who is a senior in high school, is about to go on to the next phase of her life. And that's the way I always approach it, is not so much a predestined or preordained kind of a future for a child. In fact, she and I were having this conversation just last night. She is has gravitated towards the entertainment industry, and she was at a performing arts magnet high school, was on stage a bunch, dancing, singing, acting, all that kind of stuff. She's she really is curious about the industry because at the very beginning, even when she was in middle school, because she also got into like a middle school that had a lot of the arts invested in the curriculum, and she really liked to perform and be on stage. She's been dancing her whole life. And I said, well, you know, my background, I've done a bunch of stuff in the entertainment industry. And so I said, here's the thing. You can have a lot of fun, but if you want to make a lot of money, then you have to figure out who actually is making the money. And the answer to that is the promoter or the producer. If you're the person that's responsible, then you're for the outcome, then you're the one that's probably going to make the money. I mean, and you got to put eyeballs on the show, butts in the seats, and you have to start thinking from that standpoint. So as you refine your craft as an entertainer, also realize that it's called show business for a reason. And that was her gateway into thinking about business because that was, you know, her area of interest. So if you have a kid that's a great mathematician or is one of those kids that loves to take things apart and put them back together or is an artist or whatever it is, if you can approach business through their kind of their interest, now you've got their attention. A really good buddy of mine actually was the best man. I was the best man at his wedding, and he is an artist, and he's actually been able to make a career as an artist for 40 years. He went to school, got a degree in fine arts, and he was surrounded, this is the way he describes it, when he was in college, he was surrounded by people that were kind of these, you know, it's built into our genetics that we reach a certain age and we just want to rebel. Anything that an adult does is stupid and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's surrounded by these kids that are invested in the art world, and the instructors are also invested in the art world. And they would talk about not selling out and not whatever. And fortunately, he had a real clear head about this and was very clear on what kind of art he liked to do. And he also was very aware that he wanted to do it for the rest of his life. And that meant that he had to sell it so he could make enough money to, you know, pay his bills. And so he went at it from a very practical standpoint. And here's his niche. I love this. The whole thing about find your niche and you'll grow rich. So his thing is military art, and he is the one that does the artwork for the big air shows like the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds, and he'll sign a contract with a military base that's going to have one of these big weekend air shows, and he pays them a fee to have the rights to do the official artwork, and then he puts it on wearables, shirts, sweatshirts, hats, he'll do pins, he'll do all that kind of stuff, and then they allow him to set up booths all across the airstrip and sell his wearables. And on a good weekend, he can make $250,000.
Wow.
I know, exactly. And it's because he figured out how to do what he loved, because he grew up near an air base, and he would watch the jets go through their training routines against the Purple Mountains Majesties type of a deal, and he just figured it all out and learned how to draw to be uber proficient, and then figured out a way in which it would be valuable, which I guess is the bottom line of business is, you know, does the potential client find whatever you're doing valuable? Which brings me back to my daughter. So I had to keep reinforcing that. You can do pet projects and do things that are fun for you, but if you want to make a living at it, if you'd rather do this than anything else and not be the person that has to get a part-time job to subsidize your craft, then you got to think of what people want and how to make it valuable to them. So if your child is into anything else that, you know, here's another thing in the world that we live in, Bert, and I'm sure that you've experienced this. My son is 11 years old, and he loves online gaming. Loves it.
Mm-hmm.
And in YouTube, I'm so cool. It's so cool that you have that YouTube channel and you're marketing that. He has gone online, and it started at an early age when he got involved in basketball. He would have basketball as his passion. So at the age of 7, he got on YouTube and looked up basketball videos, all the great players of all time. And he taught himself a crossover dribble. He taught himself a crossover dribble.
Wow.
And YouTube was his tutor. Now, I played basketball my whole life. We go out in the backyard, and he says, Dad, watch this. He crosses me over once, twice, three times. And I'm like, what? And it's because he the amount of education that's available online now, and parents have a tendency to freak out over things. And I think a lot of that is because of peer pressure, because everybody else is freaking out. But if you take a few steps
well,
back,
well, and I think I think that part of it could be peer pressure. I think the other part of it is just fear, in the sense that parents unfortunately want your kids to be safe, and they want your kids to do the safe thing, which is go to school, get an education, and get a secure job, which, you know, for the most part doesn't exist anymore. Security is definitely a it isn't 20 years or 30 years. It's more like 5 or 6 years nowadays. And so when somebody says, hey, I want to go online and try this or try that, or I'm going to try this other riskier type of career, parents do freak out.
Well, I think you have to take a few steps back, because you're right. There is a lack of security on a certain level. But you know that whole thing of it's a buyer's market or it's a seller's market? Well,
yes.
there are certain trades that it is definitely a seller's market. There are certain trades, well, I think the statistics are that most people will change jobs about 6 times during their adult life. The difference is most people make the choice to change the job. And I've spoken recently. It's funny how the universe works because, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear, and the teacher can take on a lot of different faces. So I've spoken to a bunch of different headhunters, people that are in the job of, and some of them specialize in corporate executives. Some of them specialize in the tech industry. And the desire and the craving for quality, top-level skilled employees is so intense right now that if you're good, all the power is in your hands, not the employer's hands.
Right.
It used to be, and there are some skills where you just, you're desperate to get a job. But it all depends. I'm old enough to I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. And in the 1960s, the aerospace industry here in Southern California was booming. But then all of a sudden, something happened. I don't know if they lost some government contracts. I have no idea. But a friend of my mom, a mom and dad's, who had a very secure job, all of a sudden was out of a job. He was an aerospace engineer. He had no job. And the whole industry kind of went, whoops. And so he couldn't get a job. Now, what we've learned in the interim between then and now is that a lot of skills are transferable. It's just a matter of you know, what skill set do you have and what other industry can use that skill set. Now, getting back to my teenage daughter, I've also talked to her about that at length because I think that people are born, it's like they come into this world with a personality. You're born who you
right.
are. And then that whole nature-nurture argument, but who you are, that's kind of like in concrete. You're designed a certain way. And if you want to look at it from a human, kind of the human species, we're like an ant colony from a certain standpoint. Because if you look at an ant colony, there's certain ants that are born to be warriors. There's others that are born to be food gatherers and so on. And human beings are exactly the same way. We're born with certain inclinations in order to the survival of the tribe. If we were way, way, way back in the day and we were living in the Serengeti with our tribe, then somebody has to get food. Somebody has to take care of the teepee. Somebody has to, you know, and whatever go on. Somebody has to lead. So it
right.
makes sense that all of that kind of genetic material that's predisposed in us is still exists. And so figuring out what your strength is, and then like, so my daughter seems to be leaning towards a creator and a leader. So she's been a director and a choreographer. And what I explained to her was those skills, you're applying it right now to an art form, but those skills of communication, seeing the big picture, understanding the details that go into the finished product, and then being able to communicate and lead people, there are corporations all over the world that are desperate for people that have those skills and that mindset. And so that's another thing about teaching your children and letting them know that who you are and what you're drawn towards can be transferred into a valuable kind of tool kit in the corporate world if you want that sense of security. And then while you're in there, if you keep your eyes open, you'll realize kind of where the industry is going, and you can stay educated and stay ahead of the game.
Absolutely.
Tech,
you know what,
and
let me tell you, I think that as parents go, when you get rid of all the other stuff, right, ultimately you want your child to believe in themselves, right? It is a lot about that mindset, that self-esteem. Damon Williams, who's our next guest, works with the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about this. But, you know, bottom line is, if your child has a healthy self-esteem, a healthy respect for themselves, a healthy mindset about their, you know, their willingness to accept risk, or to believe in themselves, then that child will probably do extremely well. Now, we have all met people who are extremely intelligent, but they have no self-esteem outside of maybe that particular subject matter or they're not they don't believe in themselves and they don't do well, or they do okay, then you have some kids who their leader, they come in different forms, but let's just say they have a high belief in themselves, and they'll do extremely well. They don't, whatever they do, they'll do well, and they tend to roll with the issues, and they overcome obstacles. And I think that if you can raise your child to believe in themselves, then I think as a parent, you've probably done a pretty good job.
And I think the path towards that self-confidence is low-hanging fruit. If a child shows some sort of proclivity towards anything, whether it be a game or whatever it is, if they're acknowledged when they do well, and they're encouraged when they need to learn, there's a school of thought now that language in regards to, now we're talking about really young kids now, it isn't that you're so smart. The phrase is, you worked really hard on that and you succeeded. Excellent. Good job. But the underlying lesson is that there are certain things that fall out of the sky and land in your lap. We've all been beneficiary of those kind of good fortune deals. But for sustained success, you got to put in the work. You got to do the work and put in the hours and get that whole 10,000 hour dealy going. But to encourage a child to see the fruits of their labor, and to, when I say low hanging fruit, follow their rhythms, and then show them different ways in which what they're already interested in can also be used in other areas, so that they still feel like it's in their wheelhouse. Then I think that's where the self-confidence comes in. And the final thing in regards to sustained success, and again, I said this to my daughter yesterday, was if you really, really like doing something, that's the key thing. Some people call it passion.
Yes.
If you really enjoy it and you think that this is something I could really do for a long time, then when life dumps on you, which, that happens to everybody every now and then, you have a setback or whatever, then it's the passion, that how much you enjoy doing whatever it is, that it keeps you just moving forward. And you have to reframe it. I think Tony Robbins likes that either you're winning or you're learning. That a setback gives has a lot of lessons, and being open to that and shutting out all of the chatter, the negative chatter that kind of comes with social behavior. And that's another thing about the internet now, that I think might have a silver lining to this ugly cloud that is the trollers and the people that just live to denigrate. That if a person kind of allows themselves to kind of be on the fringes of that environment, they get desensitized to ridiculous negativity. And if we as adult figures can encourage them from that standpoint, like, who cares? I really like what you did, and then kind of turn it around. Like, I really like that you did this. Or do the compliment sandwich, the critique sandwich. You compliment them.
Yes.
You give them constructive criticism, and then you compliment them on the, on the end. All of that kind of is the world to a child, because you and I can both think back on our youth and the monumental moments that probably didn't mean anything to anybody else, but for some reason had a huge impact, whether positive or negative. And if we are conscious as adults, it's kind of like that old saying of who's going to be the adult here. Well, I guess the definition, we all know some dopey adults, but the idea is that if you're an adult that is looking from an encouraging standpoint, trying to make the best of a child's life, helping them, because my definition of our role as a parent is just, what can I do to make sure that, to give you the best opportunity possible to enjoy the rest of your life? If I can do that,
I'll
let you know that you're loved and you have the tools to move forward and be productive and enjoy the rest of your life, we're good.
Absolutely. And that's really what it comes down to, because all the other stuff will eventually work itself out. We have all seen kids who got a degree in one thing and it ended up completely the other end of that spectrum. And let me tell you, I have the great pleasure of having five kids
My wife and I have been together for over 30 years, and you think that your child's going to go this direction, and all of a sudden they go that direction, and like you said, you start to freak out as a parent. Oh my gosh, what are they doing? And you know what? It just all works out, and it really comes down to what you said. As long as that child knows that they're loved, they have at least support at home. They have that self-esteem and they're, what do you call it? That's ultimately it, because ultimately that's all they're going to have. I mean, sooner or later, mom and dad die and they're on their own. And so if they have the memory of being supported by mom and dad, they have them, they have some of those, like you said, they can go back in time and see some key areas that were meaningful to them. They're going to do great. They're going to do well in whatever they decide to do.
Well is subjective. It's really interesting. And it's hard not to, yeah, and it's difficult because as parents, the healthy parent with a reasonably good emotional and psychological foundation, most of us want our children to have less pain than we had and have a better life than we had. But we're kind of not in control of all of that. And they're going to walk their own path and learn whatever they need to learn. But there was a survey that was done, getting back to the healthy parent deal, there was a survey that was done about young girls who exhibit self-destructive behavior, whether it be substance abuse or whatever. And in, I think, over 70% of those cases, those girls did not have a healthy father figure. And so I took that to heart and said, all right, well then, number one, she's never going to doubt that I love her. It doesn't mean that I approve of everything. But to know that, and I have said on more than one occasion, it doesn't make a difference how mad I am or frustrated I am. Never doubt that I love you and I think you're incredible. So, and then also I made sure that when she was in grade school, and she got home, she was in a carpool. So when she walked up the driveway, I could see her from my office, and I made sure I greeted her at the door and gave her a hug every day when she came home so that she didn't have any need to look for masculine physical affection, that she knew that her dad loved her and it was all good. And men sometimes get, it's really kind of a nerve-wracking thing as a father, what's the appropriate way to approach my adolescent daughter and all that kind of stuff. And I just said, if I hug her every day, then it's all gravy. You know what I mean? She knows I love her.
Yes.
She knows that she's going to be comforted. And then you just look for ways in which you just kind of open up their eyes and let them know what the possibilities are. Even when they hit the fan and they can't see anything except their misery, to give them the space to grieve, whatever it is, and then let them know, that's okay. It's a big world.
Absolutely. You know what, Clint, we're out of time. We're going to end on that note. And I think this has been such a great topic as two fathers talking about their children. Interestingly enough, all I have at home now, all we have is our two daughters, and daughters are very special. And so this has just been a lot of fun. Clint, always good to have you on the show. Looking forward to have you back again another time.
Anytime, Bert. You're awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good stuff there from Clint Huff. And, Clint Huff, again, you can look him up, and he's done some celebrity weddings, ESPN, MC for Arnold Sports Festival, and just a very warm individual. And I'm going to add this, he's also a ruggedly handsome guy. He just fits that bill. He's the kind of guy that will always do well on TV because he's got all the moves, right? He's got the looks. He's got this great smile, great personality, as you can tell from just listening to him. And he's just a genuinely nice guy. So it's always a lot of fun to hang out with him. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to be hanging out with Damon Williams right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite.
Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
This is so cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Dr. Damon Williams, is a scholar, leader, and educator passionate about making organizations inclusive and excellent for all. September of 2013, he assumed a new role of global responsibility as the Senior Vice President for Program Training and Youth Development Services for Boys and Girls Clubs of America. In this role, he is the Chief Education Officer for Boys Club and for Boys and Girls Club Movement, leading the nation program strategy for nearly 4 million youth annually served by the club. Dr. Williams, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Very glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your show and to share with your community today.
You bet, you bet. And again, you know, you and I were talking right before the show started, and you and I were at the same event, which was an event that was sponsored by former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger there at USC, California, and it was having specifically to do with after-school programs. And it was a great event. I learned a lot, and it got me fired up. What did you think of the event?
No, I thought it brought together a number of folks who are deeply committed to providing quality leadership development programs for youth in the out-of-school and after-school time. And one of the great positives is it gave me an opportunity to meet you and make a new friend and become a part of your community that listens to you regularly. So I'm very excited to be here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this centennial generation. Who is the centennial generation?
Sure. So at the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, you know, one of the things that we really focus on is understanding youth, understanding teens, understanding the young people that are in our clubhouses and in our communities. And as a part of that effort, we've been engaged in a tremendous amount of research, and we have a new paper that we are releasing to the world that really focuses into this centennial generation. And everybody's heard of the baby boomers. Everybody's heard of the millennials. But the young people that are in our schools, the young people that are in our clubs today, really are part of a new generational cohort that is just beginning to emerge on the national landscape of discussion, the centennials. And so we define centennial generation youth as those individuals who are born 1997 through to today, so 0 to 20 years old, who are part of a different kind of generational cohort than even the millennial generation, which is commonly defined as between 1981 and 1996. If you really think about it, someone born in 1981, 82, 83, 84 is living a very different experience than someone who was born in the year, say, 2010. And so we believe we are very much in a new generational context, and that generational context we are referring to as the centennial generation.
Yeah, you know what, and just to kind of prove this point of how different this generation is, my son, who was helping me around the office a while back, I asked him to fax some things out, and I gave him a stack of faxes to send out, because I had to get to a meeting, and he called me and said, "Hey, Dad, the fax machine's not working." And I said, "Well, I know it's working because I used it this morning, And we received a few faxes. And first of all, you know, I receive where back in the past we would get hundreds of faxes a day. Now we get three or four. But anyway, we still get a few faxes here and there. And then it dawned on me that he wasn't hitting one plus the number. So I said to him, "Are you dialing one plus the number?" He goes, "No, that's stupid. Why would anybody do that?" I said, "Well, back in the old days, you had to hit one plus the number. This is a generation that's never had to do that, just to give you an idea." And so, of course, he tried it and it worked. But it just gives you a little insight as to how different this generation is. A whole generation of people who have never had to dial one plus the number. We have a whole generation of people who've never licked a stamp because they either have never used one or because they now are a little sticky adhesives. And now, Dr. Williams, we have a driverless car generation. It's very possible in the near future that we're going to have a generation of people who have never had a driver's license because they don't need one because the cars are driverless. It's just an amazing situation.
Well, you know, they're either driverless or at least they're Uber-fied. And I think that you're hitting on some of those common sense insights that really help us to understand the generational differences that are at play. You know, one of the common terms that is oftentimes used to refer to millennials is they're digital natives. One of the terms we use to refer to centennials is that they're digital intuitives, that they intuitively engage with technology. You know, I'll never forget when I first started really theming that term and thinking about it in terms of the research and the publication that we ultimately offered. I was sitting down with my daughter, and my daughter was at the time about 14 months old, and she was just crying, and I'm a first-time dad, and, you know, the first thing that I did when she was crying is I yelled for her mom. The second thing I did is check to see if she needed a change. The third thing that I did was check to see if it was time for a feeding. When I had exhausted all those different things to get her to stop crying and she still was crying, she did something that soothed herself. She hit her hand on my iPad and did a swipe. And, you know,
no.
To hit an iPad with a lot of different fingers, it'll start making noises. It'll start playing music or something. And so she hits the iPad and swipes at roughly 14 months old and she stops crying. And, you know, my daughter is now 3 years old, and she will request my phone or iPad. She can't unlock it, but once it's unlocked, at 3 years old, she'll say, "Daddy, I want to pick you what I want." And so she'll then navigate through the lead screen, choose YouTube Kids, pop it open, and then navigate through to the content that she's passionate about, the things that she's interested in, the things that she has self-directed, identified as a priority for her. And that is the intuitive way that this generation engages technology. They'll never have to be educated about how to turn something on. They'll never have to be educated on how to point and click. They'll never have to be educated on how to swipe or open or close different programs. It will intuitively be a part of their identity system. And you mentioned it in your conversation with the last caller. It is intuitively a part of how they live and lead and engage in the world. For them, technology means a couple things. One, it means an opportunity for you to always to engage in research and to explore your passions. So if you're interested in something, you can always go to the internet. You can always search it. You can always find out information about it in self-directed fashion through YouTube or another vehicle, and you referenced that before. The second thing that the digital intuitive generation always has is they always have connectivity at their fingertips. And for them, in many ways, this means never having to be alone. You can always be connected virtually to your friends. You can always be connected virtually to your communities that you're a part of. You can always be engaged in various different forms through social media and other digital-based connectivities. The third aspect of it is it also means that you always have voice in the world. So as soon as you begin broadcasting, you are a personal brand. As soon as you begin broadcasting on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, it matters not the platform, Uvu, House Party, some of the new ones that are emerging. You are a brand and you're connected and you're communicating in the world. That is a very different context in which this generation has than even the millennials, particularly the older millennials, that didn't grow up with it but discovered it or it emerged later in life. This generation will grow up and live with these things from the beginning, so their engagement of it is intuitive, and their engagement of it suggests a host of things in terms of marketing to them, in terms of educating them, and in terms of their safety and even their health moving forward.
Okay, so this brings up this question. Here we have, as you said, this generation that is digitally intuitive, and their teachers, maybe not so. So how do you get, how do you get these, these teachers to engage and to really connect with these centennials? Because I could just see a massive disconnect there. Talk about this.
Absolutely. And I think the disconnect happens not only at the K through 12 level, but it also is even occurring still at the higher education level, where we have a generation of learners who are expecting to be empowered through digitally engaged technologies to, in a self-directed way, explore things and uncover things, and they're oftentimes encountering learning environments where the technology is not strongly embedded in the curriculum. The learning activities that they're tasked with doing are not strongly embedded in the curriculum. You know, and one of the realities of this is really stratified along economic lines. So we used to talk about the digital divide as being defined as those individuals who could connect to the internet versus those that cannot, and that was the digital divide. The 21st century digital divide is not really around connectivity. Connectivity is ubiquitous no matter the economic level, for the most part, of students and learners and youth across the country. Where the divide plays itself out is the degree to which technology, the degree to which high-speed internet activity, the degree to which young people are being trained to code, not just to use Snapchat, but to be educated in ways where they learn how to code and develop the next Snapchat. That's the new digital divide. Every year, there's about 40 million young people across the country who are in schools that do not have high-speed internet connectivity in those schools that is used in the service of learning. And as a result, this new digital divide is creating a world where some young people are being educated in a context where they're becoming what we refer to as digital ninjas, meaning you can do more than just use the technology. You can actually code and develop the next generation of technology. So you have the digital ninjas and the digital ninja have-nots. And one of the things that we believe is that Boys and Girls Clubs of America can be a great difference maker in ensuring that more young people are provided with digitally appropriate experiences that help them to develop those 21st century skills that we know are so important and critical to success in the world we live in today.
Yeah, I like that. And it's interesting. You're absolutely right. It's for the most part, it's not about if you're connected. It's how fast can you, how fast are you connected? What is the speed, right? Because that's because most of us are connected. I mean, 60 Minutes was talking about the connectivity in parts of these third world countries. And where some of these third world countries don't have a banking system like we do here, but because they're connected via cell phones, they use their cell phones as a banking system, and they're able to pay their bills, receive money, pay their groceries, all from a cell phone. So it's just amazing, and I think that your point there is you nailed it. I think it's a great example. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the Boys and Girls Club of America. You know, there's been this is an organization that's been around as long as I can remember. There's been many people, celebrities and celebrity business leaders who attribute a lot of their success to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. But why don't you tell our listeners, what does the Boys and Girls Club of America do? What is their mission statement?
Sure. So we help all young people, particularly those who need us most, by providing a safe and supportive, positive youth development environment that really focuses into our three priority areas. One is academic success, two is leadership and character, and three is healthy lifestyles. Across the country, there's more than 4,000 clubhouses. that each and every year touch more than 4 million young people. Young people come from all walks of life that are in our clubhouses. Many of them are underrepresented minorities. Many of them are first-generation college goers, but not all of them. We have students who are part of our clubs that come from every economic background. One of the things that's significant that many don't know is that we're partnered with all four branches of the military. And inside of that partnership, we work with the Department of Defense, and we serve several hundred thousand teens and youth, not only in the United States, but also globally around the world. I recently got back from Vicenza, Italy, where I was visiting the military base over there and had a great opportunity to spend time with some of the teenage sons and daughters of our servicemen and women who are doing that incredibly important work, and we are incredibly proud to be a partner in supporting their youth to ensure that they're having great youth development leadership experiences outside the clubhouses. And so, again, our focus is academic success, is good character, citizenship, leadership, and it's healthy lifestyles, and ensuring that young people have a safe and positive developmental environment for them to come to each and every day, oftentimes during the after-school hours and during the summers.
Yeah, you know what? I just learned something new. I did not realize that you guys work with all branches of the military. That is, I think, probably information that most people never even knew. So that's great. I'm glad to hear that you guys are supporting the military and the children, because it is such a vital, vital thing. A lot of people just don't think about all the different sacrifices that these families make. It's not just the adult that's being deployed, it's the family that's being left behind. And so I'm so glad that you guys are supporting our brave men and women. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about what you see as to prepare. How is the Boys and Girls Club of America preparing this centennial generation for leadership? Give me some of your thoughts.
Absolutely. Well, one thing is that we're in the midst of a massive campaign to really increase the number of teens in particular who are coming to our clubhouses regularly and participating in our various programs. Programs that, again, could span from college access programs, helping young people to understand how to access college, to workforce development programs that first focus on first job readiness, focus on interview skills, focus on resume preparation, all the way through to some of our other leadership programs that focus in service and community engagement and even activism and being involved in social causes. We know that to really connect with teens, a couple things have to be in place. One is you have to provide opportunities for young people to have a space where they can hang out, mess around, geek out, but a space. We know that's really important. A second thing that we know to be very important is providing them with opportunities where they can elevate their voices and be heard and to lead and shape their environment. So we're very big on teen advisory boards. We're very big on teen governance and leadership structures where they're actually shaping their reality. Another piece of this, and this is one I want to make sure I take some time with, and you actually connected into it in the last segment, is how do we provide opportunities for young people to explore their passions, right? For them to explore the things that they're interested in, whether that's career areas, whether that's music, whether that's hip-hop culture, whether it's poetry, whether it's dance, whether it's athletics. We know that teens vote with their feet, and the more that experience that you're providing to them can be a trip driver, the better. You know, take this example. Procter & Gamble makes a number of different products, right? And right. Procter & Gamble knows what's going to drive you to Walmart to make a purchase. They know that bounce sheets that you put in your dryer is not a big enough product to probably cause you to go to Walmart just to get those bounce sheets. But I tell you, when you don't have Tide, when you don't have Gain, when you don't have Cheer, one of their products around their detergent products, when you don't have that product and you don't have those nice, tidy items that you need, you're going to the store to buy them. And when you get to the store, you're going to throw that bounce box in your basket, whether you need the bounce box or not, so it's a companion item. what we know is that what drives a trip for a teenager is going to be an opportunity to engage their passions, and the other major driver of a trip for a teenager is a space to be supported and nurtured and guided by someone who really cares about them, a relationship. So we know that passions and relationships will drive teens to environments that are good for them, and unfortunately will guide teens to environments that are not good for them. You know, the proliferation that we see with gang activity and negative activity is because the relationships that are there and the chance to maybe be involved with things that they find to be fun or interesting. And so we know that relationships and passions can be negative, but at the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, across our network, we make relationships and passions be incredibly positive.
Yeah, you know what, and it's so funny you should say that. This is, you know, so important to drive the point home a little bit more, and that is, you know, I have surveyed smokers, approximately 1,000 smokers, and the number one reason that smokers tend to smoke isn't because of a commercial or a specific celebrity. It's because they wanted to feel accepted. They wanted to feel validated. It was because they wanted to further that relationship. And it's an amazing thing what we as humans will do to get a relationship, to get validated, bottom line, to feel that love, that connection that we all need. So, and I love what you're talking about there. That can be a negative thing like smoking, or can it be a positive thing like the Boys and Girls Club of America? So I think that's such a valid point. And sometimes as parents, we forget how crucially important it is to build relationships. Even with our children, you still have to build that relationship.
That's exactly right. And, you know, for the parents that are out there listening, to the educators that are out there listening, you know, I think it's so important that we help young people to have a sense of belonging, right? A sense of connection, mm-hmm. a sense of affiliation to something positive. You know, we have to keep our young people in positive and affirming youth development spaces, whether it's sports, whether it's the arts, whether it's leadership and service, whether it's a job, whether it's just simply putting them into a community, whether it's faith-based. The more that we can double down on putting them in strong experiences that lead to a sense of belonging, the better. And just to connect this conversation to the digital aspect of it, those experiences need to have a material and traditional way of interaction, not just the digital. At the same time, I think the digital is important, but the more that we can get them into physical spaces that then they also amplify in a digital world, the better. One of the things we talk about in our new paper is this idea of a blended youth development experience where you're engaged in the traditional physical positive environment, but also in the digital world, and it comes together in a blended experience that we believe is the answer for centennial generation youth who are so digitally intuitive and engaged.
I love it. I love it. Hey, okay, so let's talk about this publication because we're almost out of time. If somebody wants to grab this publication that you're talking about, where do they go?
Sure. We would direct them to our website, www.bgca.org/teens. So that's bgca.org/teens. bgca.org/teens. Also, I'd invite them to, you know, join my social media community. I am at DAWPHD on Twitter, and I am also Damon A. Williams on Facebook. You can find me also on Instagram, but please join me and join the community as I oftentimes will push content through those channels that talk about the centennial generation. And moving forward, we will be doing more and more of that as we look to the future and working to really bring this conversation to the nation in a number of different ways.
I love it. I love it. Dr. Williams, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Looking forward to bring you back and talk more about the centennial generation as well as the other generations. And again, for you guys who want to go out and get this publication, I'm going to urge you to go to bgca.org/teens. Dr. Williams, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All righty. You bet. Good stuff there from our guest today. I love this conversation with Dr. Williams. It's so vitally important what the Boys and Girls Club of America do. You can tell that Dr. Williams is a very passionate leader, and you never know the little difference or the difference that has this massive impact. This little relationship here and there, little word of encouragement changes somebody forever. And if you look up celebrities who have been, celebrities and boys, girls, Boy, Girls Club of America, Boys and Girls Club of America, they have tremendous alumni. One of them that comes to mind is Denzel Washington, but there's literally scores of big leaders from Hollywood and from business that were impacted greatly by the Boys and Girls Club of America. As always, I'm so delighted that you stopped by, and I appreciate you sharing our message. I appreciate you connecting with me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn. Remember, let's share this message with everybody. Let's help as many people as we can. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.